Hello, this is Elizabeth Hodgkin. For the last 3 months, since May, I've been your search coordinator in Baghdad. I mean, during our research, we've done quite a lot on the question of security and policing. And during this, we've interviewed a number of women and we've tried to look at the situation of women during this time. It's certain that women feel that the situation has been a good deal more unsafe since April, that the streets are now more unsafe, that there are more killings, there's more attacks, that women feel that it's more dangerous to go and come back from work and to take an active part in activities. Some girls have been withdrawn from school because their parents felt that they were unsafe. It was unsafe to go to school. We've investigated some cases of attacks on women. There have been some cases of rape, some cases of honor killings. One case, particularly terrible case we investigated, was a woman who had been attacked by her husband, but with a Kalashnikov. I mean, one problem is that there are an awful lot of guns around. She had been shot in the legs with a Kalashnikov because she had wanted to get away from her husband. She'd been married at 12. She was now 19, and she tried to go back to her father. She was in hospital. Her husband was walking free. There are a number of honor killings which mostly don't get investigated. The vast majority don't get investigated, and the people who carry out the killings don't get arrested by the police. At the same time, there's been a great burst of activity from all sectors of Iraqi society. Since April, the formation of lots of organizations, the formation of lots of human rights organizations, although you notice that in these organizations women are underrepresented, at the same time there are in the human rights organizations sometimes women's branches. In the Bar Association, we've had very interesting discussions with women lawyers who have got a women's human rights organizations, and I think this is a great hope for women's activism in the future. Women's organizations are being founded. They need to be strengthened, but they're there and they'll have a more and more active voice. One thing in our meetings with women have very constantly raised their concerns with the occupying forces. They've said that they feel that the coalition forces have often shown that they don't understand Eastern customs, and especially the fact of searches of women. And we've had records of people going into search to houses, and US forces and British forces searching women, or people feel very strongly against them going through doors, searching through the doors. Often we've seen that they've not only gone through the cupboards and searched through it, but they've thrown all the clothes on the ground. The perception of women is that women should not be treated in this way and searched in this way.
For the audience who don't understand, what is honor killing and why people listen to the search? Could you expand a little more details?
An honor killing is a killing where it's felt that a woman has damaged the honor of the family by having relations with a man or even going out with a man, and so that therefore she may be killed by her brother or a member of the family. It's often preferably called, actually, family killings, because it usually happens within the family and it's usually carried out by a member of the family. And often it's not reported and the police don't take any action about it, as though a woman's life is expendable.
Do you have, so far, this kind of violence against women having happened in Iraq?
It's very difficult to find information about that. If you do find situations where a woman may have been raped, then usually if she went back and told her family, even if she's raped and it's nothing to do with her own fault, she might be killed by the family for having brought the family into disrepute. And so therefore, if you hear that a woman has been raped, you often don't want to go to the family to find out more information in case you're putting her in danger.
Could you give me some analysis? What is the ultimate impact to the woman in contemporary Iraqi society? What will be with all this violence against women, discrimination against women? And what is the most important impact?
I think this is a period of transition. This is a period of change that women are not taking their rightful position in society. And I think that what is important now is that there must be positive efforts to ensure that in every area women do have a rightful position. For instance, in the governing council, which has just been set up of 24 members, only one member is a woman. And I think that there must be real stronger efforts to make sure that the position of women and the equality of women is enshrined in future in the constitution, in future legislation.
So what you worry is about the women's participation on the future government will be severely limited.
Well, I think that it will be, for the moment, limited unless there are strong efforts to make sure that the equality of women is respected. I mean, and we are particularly concerned about the question of violence against women in the house, which isn't dealt with by the police because there's a perception that it's okay for husbands to be, or fathers to be violent against women. Violence against women also in society where they don't have the means to protect themselves.
All right. And the second question is, can you tell me a little bit about the social violence, crimes, and what happened in Iraq? What is the situation?
Well, often if a crime is committed against a woman, as I said, women prefer not to report the crime because they're afraid that this will impact badly on their own honour and on their situation, and it may impact it badly on what's happening at home.
The second question is the impact of the security in post-war occupation Iraq.
I mean, the question of security is a question that every single Iraqi feels, man or woman, feels is fundamental. There's a question of what is happening, the possibility of attacks on the street, the fact that people don't much go out after 8 p.m. at night, that women, especially in the early days after the occupation, said they didn't like to go out in the afternoon, that parents felt themselves nervous about children, especially girl children, going to school, and they would accompany them to school sometimes and wait outside the school for 3 or 4 hours until they'd finished and then accompany them back. Now, part of this was a real security problem with real attacks happening, and part of it was a perception. I mean, Iraq has for a long time been a country where a lot of there hasn't been much true information from newspapers, and so a lot depends on people's stories. And so the perception has been that it's unsafe and that girls and women are in danger of being abducted, and the perception is what matters. And so the perception has limited the effectiveness and the life of women over the last couple of months.
Do you have any figures? I heard that somebody that's been telling me that there's over 2,000 killing, murders in Baghdad since the end of the war or something?
I really don't know. We did start to get figures, but not to do with women precisely, but with whether there was an increase in the number of killings, knifings, violent attacks after the end of the war. And we were told that certainly that in May, there were in hospitals, there would be about 15 to 20 per day. By June, the figure had dropped to under 5 per day. We were told by the head of the Institute for Forensic Medicine that before violent killings had been about 6% of the total of killings that he on which autopsies were carried out, and in June they were 70%. So there certainly has been a deterioration of insecurity. Amnesty International has complained about the fact that in an attempt to stop the violence and the deterioration in security, the US military have rounded up thousands of Iraqis whom they suspect as looters and thieves or for carrying weapons, and they have put them in the airport or in Abu Ghraib prison, and where for they are kept without any access to judicial review, without any lawyers, without any access to family, in conditions which are extremely poor, with under tents in temperatures of over 100 degrees, without access to sufficient water, and food which Iraqis feel that they can't eat, without any access to washing facilities and without any change of clothes. Now, the conditions, the US are trying to get the conditions in the detention centres better, but still there are a lot of people under tents, which is extremely hot. Still, they have no access to families. After 2 months in detention, the families are going around wondering where they are. Mothers are not being told, and we are particularly meeting the sort of women who are going around. One woman we met, whose son was a taxi driver in Mosul, the son had been taken affair to a house. The US forces had come in, arrested everyone in the house. The son had been taken away. And the woman, who was an illiterate old woman, had been trying to go from every office for the past 7 weeks to try to find out where her son was. The impact of the arrest, the people who were arrested are mostly men, but the impact has often fallen on the women who've lost their breadwinner, who don't know where their children are, and who can't find out where their children are.
Do you have any chance to talk this with your concern with the U.S. authority? Do you have any chance you can visit the people who have been detained?
No, we don't have chance to visit the people who are detained, nor do their families, nor we hope the U.S. We have had many talks with the U.S. authorities, and I must say that they accept our complaints, our concerns about the situation, and they agree that the conditions of detention and the fact that there's no contact and no access to judicial review is a serious problem. And I hope they'll get it better, but meanwhile, families will be going on wondering what's happened. We've had a number of good meetings with the U.S. authorities, U.S. military lawyers, and we've discussed all these questions. They're trying to build better detention centres. They're trying to get in judicial review. But meanwhile, there's an opaqueness in the U.S. Army, which means that, for instance, in one case, the son of a woman was wounded when there was a U.S. raid on the house to arrest her husband, who was a high-ranking military person. The son was taken away, and a week later, the woman still doesn't know where he is. And we, as Amnesty International, have now gone round one military office after another, trying to find out what would be the procedures of taking a wounded minor during a raid and where he would be taken. And we haven't found out. We go back to the woman to say where. We say, I'm sorry, after days of trying, we still don't know where your son is. And naturally, she collapses, she faints. She doesn't know what has happened to him. I mean, these are procedures which have to be changed.
So can you give me one short sentence? What is your demand, Amnesty International demand, to the U.S. authority and to what you want to see what happened in Iraq?
Well, we would like the US authorities and the coalition authorities and the UK authorities to live up to the Geneva Conventions and the international human rights standards that they have signed and ensure that the highest human rights standards are maintained both in arrest, detention, in the situation of women and in all the areas.